See how universal basic income will eliminate poverty now on this episode of Planetary Makeover.
At least three Nobel Prize winning economists have been in favor of UBI. So it's a pretty long list. There were many proponents, Martin Luther King, Pope Francis, Stephen Hawking, Andrew Young as Treasury Secretaries, James Baker and George Shultz, Sam Walton, Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Ilhan Omar. The question quickly becomes not so much how can we afford UBI, but how can we afford not to implement UBI?
Hello, I'm your host, David Minot II, and I invite you today to put on your skeptic hat, because we're about to stir up a lively wind that may well have that hat fly off your head to reveal the complete viability of everyone having what they need. It's called universal basic income, or UBI for short. So let's look at the skeptical point of view first that says such a plan would discourage work and is just an unachievable utopian dream. It's important to remember that skepticism is really just an extension of the scientific method whereby we delve deeply into any given subject in order to discover the interconnectedness, if I can say that, of everyone and everything. And with that, let me introduce Mitch Williams, an inspirational speaker, performer, author, and spiritual pioneer, who began in a traditional religious background and dared to study the ageless wisdom teaching that comes to us from the Himalayas and underlies all the religions, and which roundly contradicts the notion that we are not our brother's keeper and that his suffering does not impact our own lives, because it does, knowingly or not. And Mitch is going to break down for us the need in today's world for universal basic income, why it works, its amazing effectiveness, and the dividends it will pay to all of our culture once enacted. Welcome, Mitch.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here today, and I'm looking forward to our conversation about UBI.
Thank you. And we're excited that you're here for the first time and hope to have you back again. Now, Mitch is going to talk to us about the evolution and maturation of our current economic system, which is sort of a capitalism, every man for himself type of deal, to the concept of universal basic income, where the needs of all are addressed and respected regardless of class or material background. It's not just utopian, it's practical. And at this point, it's required. Well, Mitch, we're fortunate to have you as a guest on the show. Tell us how we can most effectively use that commonality to lift all boats, as the metaphor goes. But first, could you start by giving us a definition of universal basic income?
Sure. Well, universal basic income is something that the idea has been around for a very long time. In fact, it goes back at least as far as the 1600s. People began talking about some form of this type of thing. But it's essentially an unconditional cash payout that goes to all members of a society. It's unconditional in that there are no requirements to receive it. Everybody gets it the same. In some cases, it's everyone over the age of 18. In some cases, it's broken down in different ways. It's a basic income in the sense that it meets the basic requirements. Some programs begin with a payment that is perhaps at or a little above the poverty level, but it's basically set up so that it is geared to meet the basic needs that someone has. And the income part is that it's just a cash payment that doesn't have any particular conditions set upon it.
The 1600s, that's astounding. I had no idea that it had gone back that far, which is interesting because we also talk about on this show the age of Aquarius And that would be a subject for another show, but that those energies just started incoming in that century. So taking us back to this century, why do we need UBI, and what societal issues does it address?
Well, obviously, poverty is the first and most prominent issue that we're talking about here. Right now, we have one of the greatest wealth inequality states that we've had historically, you know, at least since the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. And tied to wealth inequality, when you have extremes of wealth and poverty, there are a whole slew of other social issues that are tied directly to that. Things like higher crime rates, obesity, dire health outcomes, higher teen pregnancies, incarceration rates. Any society or any location, any geographical or political location, if you will, that has these extremes of wealth inequality also tends to have extremes of these types of problems. And the list goes on and on and on. It's pretty amazing how many problems are tied to this wealth inequality. So alleviating poverty is an important element to addressing all of these issues. Once you begin to lift people out of that poverty level, a lot of these issues begin to resolve themselves. And having a basic income floor below which people cannot fall is one way to ensure that we don't have major elements of our society drifting into poverty and having all of these problems.
If only everyone was aware of how many issues universal basic income would address, I think more people would enthusiastically embrace it. But given the resistance today, I'm wondering, is UBI realistic in our current economic social climate?
Well, there's a lot of debate on that topic, actually. You know, some people say it can never be economically viable. Some people say it's not politically viable. Some people say that it will discourage people's tendency to want to work. But the evidence actually is pretty strong in the opposite direction than all of those cases. And perhaps we can maybe look at each of those issues one by one. Would that be a good idea? Okay. Well, first is the first objection that usually comes up to UBI is the idea that it will dissuade people from working. That, you know, by giving them this cash payout so that they can meet their basic needs, that employment rates will drop. But we have a lot of different studies doing UBI pilot programs, and the evidence is pretty overwhelming that that is actually not the case. In pretty much every single instance where they have experimented with a basic income, the employment levels have either remained the same or in some cases even increased. One of the pilot programs over the past few years and that took place in Stockton, California, during the pandemic, the participants of the program increased their employment rate by about 12%, and about 12% more than the control group, which remained about the same. And this was at the height of the pandemic. So, you know, employment was a big issue. So these rates generally increase. There are only two elements of a society where employment rates drop. And those are with new mothers who elect to spend more time at home with their new child, their baby, and also people who elect to stay in school longer. And under UBI programs, school attendance and graduation rates all go up for people in the programs. So all of these things are things to be addressed that UBI can kind of tackle. And it really doesn't affect employment in a negative way, it often, like I said, has a positive effect. In fact, oftentimes UBI allows people to finish their education and get better employment. It also allows them the leeway, the freedom to take risks and to begin entrepreneurial endeavors. And so it actually is a driver of the economy. I just heard just earlier today, I heard some statistics about from a group called Give Directly. They're a group that has conducted UBI pilot programs in different countries throughout the world. And pretty much without exception, there is a 1 to 2.6 return rate. So for every dollar invested in a UBI program in the local economy, it delivers $2.6 for every single dollar that's spent. So it's pretty impressive.
Mitch, is universal basic income realistic in our current social economic climate? And what are the main objections to implementing universal basic income, and how would you address those?
Those are a couple questions, and let me try to address them one at a time. First of all, I have come to believe through my research into UBI that it is viable, at least potentially, in our current climate. There are some hurdles that need to be overcome in order to do so. However, there's actually a lot going on with UBI. There are pilot programs taking place across this country in various cities and around the world in other countries as well. It's an idea whose time is beginning to come, I believe. And so it's beginning more at the grassroots level. There's a national organization called Mayors for Guaranteed Income that has formed, made up of mayors in various cities throughout the country in the United States, who are either doing pilot programs currently or who are trying to do so that they can gather data and information to hopefully move towards a national program. The objections to UBI, there are really three of them. The first is the idea that if you give people money, it's going to take away their incentives to want to work. The second is the economic one, you know, how can we pay for this? And the third one is political, how can we do this in the current political climate? It's not going to be political viable. And to my mind, that was the hardest one to overcome. But let me get back to that one and address the other two first. First of all, the idea that people won't work. If they're given an income. Well, as I said, the studies have gone on in different pilot programs beginning back in the 60s. They actually did a pretty massive one of about 8,500 people in seven different states across the country. And then more recently, there are a lot of pilot programs in this country and elsewhere. And pretty much without exception, the employment rates either stay the same or in some cases even go up a little bit. The recent pilot program in Stockton, California, during the pandemic showed that in the pilot program, the people involved in the basic income program increased their employment by about 12% as compared to the control group, which wasn't receiving the basic income. In pretty much all of them, though, they stay level or go up. There are only two small groups in any of these programs where the employment rates go down, and those are new mothers who have new babies and they elect to stay home longer with their kids, and people who elect to stay in school longer. When the programs are on, the people involved in basic income programs and the families in them and the students, they have higher school attendance rates and higher graduation rates for the people in the program. So, you know, these are elements that show that that disincentive to work is actually not the case. And in some cases, it gives people the freedom to take on more entrepreneurial risk. People are able to change jobs, they're able to get additional education to get a better job, and they're even in many cases able to begin to start their own businesses. So it actually enhances the economy. So that's the first objection. The second one is the economic one. How can we possibly afford to give people money? Well, a couple things. First of all, it's already much more efficient and effective and cost-effective than our current social welfare programs. Most of our social welfare programs have requirements that you have to meet. And so it actually disincentivizes people from working, because if they increase their employment levels, their income goes up and they're taken off the welfare program. UBI doesn't have that requirement. It's unconditional. That's one of the elements of UBI. And so it doesn't drop the employment rates, but it also is more effective and cost effective because it doesn't require the government oversight and the bureaucracy. You have to have people in these other programs to make sure that people are meeting the requirements of the programs. But with UBI, that's not the case. You're basically just sending out checks to people. And so it's very straightforward and simple and quite cost effective. And according to some research and studies and estimates, the cost to society as a whole, as well as government, of poverty, the effects of poverty are actually a high cost kind of a condition. And the cost of poverty to society are actually twice what it would cost to implement a UBI program at or slightly above the poverty level. And so the question quickly becomes not so much how can we afford UBI, but how can we afford not to implement UBI? And there's a lot of other evidence that kind of goes along the same lines. Okay, and that brings up the third one, which is the political objection. You know, how can we possibly get, especially conservatives, to go along with this? You know, they hear UBI and they immediately say, well, that's socialism. You're giving people money, never works. It's never worked. You know, we can't do that. And so that becomes the objection. However, historically, some of the most prominent leaders of the move to implement UBI have been on the conservative side. And we can dig into the history a little bit more in just a little bit, but that's also quite fascinating as well.
Yes, I'm still blown away by the fact that you told us that discussion of this first began in the 1600s, the 17th century. And it's taken all this time, over like, 400 years later, and we're still debating it. So can you talk a little bit more about the history of universal basic income and who have been the supporters of the policy in the past and supporters now?
Sure. There were writers, as I said, at least as early as the 1700s, who were proposing this as one possible way to alleviate poverty. And they actually did some experimentation with it in the late 1700s and early 1800s in Britain. And there were some good results, but it was dismantled because of the elites feeling threatened by it and feeling that it gave workers too much power. And so it was done away with. And the history of it was actually distorted by the people who wanted to do away with it. And then it's popped up again and again in different places. And I'm obviously most familiar with the history here in the United States, but it began to come up again in the late 1950s and early 60s and into the 70s. There were many proponents. Surprisingly, Milton Friedman, who's considered one of the leading proponents of the 20th century of neoliberalism, that's easy for me to say, the neoliberal approach to economics and capitalism, the free market approach, he had a profound impact on the conservative approach to economics really pushed our society, a Western society, in that direction. But also Martin Luther King, towards the end of his life, was someone who was a strong proponent of UBI, of some form of a basic income. He had begun to shift his focus from the racial inequality to economic inequality. And they had actually proposed a march on Washington to demand an economic bill of rights. And one of the demands that they had was to establish some type of a basic income. And unfortunately, that march on Washington was scheduled for what turned out to be just shortly after he was assassinated. And so obviously it didn't come to pass. But that story of the history involving the influence of Martin Luther King and Milton Friedman are quite interesting as well.
And are there some more current leaders that have expressed interest in UBI?
Well, some of them are pretty obvious. Like I said, Martin Luther King is a strong advocate of UBI, some type of a basic income. Currently, Pope Francis is a strong advocate. Stephen Hawking, in fact, in one of the last statements that he made online, he said that we're going to need a basic income in the future. Andrew Young is a politician who ran on a platform of some type of a basic income in the last presidential election. Some others include the conservative Treasury secretaries, James Baker and George Shultz, as well as Sam Walton, Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, and a number of Silicon Valley executives, and also at least three Nobel Prize winning economists have been in favor of UBI. So it's a pretty long list. One, though, who is really interesting, in fact, a lot of people don't know this, but we came this close to actually having universal basic income here in the United States. And it was because of Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was very, very close to getting a bill passed, putting a type of basic income in place. Now, this was because of the influence of Martin Luther King. As I said, towards the end of his life, he was really pushing hard for some type of a basic income, but also Milton Friedman. For those who are not familiar with Milton Friedman, he was a neoliberal economist, a Nobel-winning economist, who many consider to be the father of our modern free market capitalism. It was his influence that had a profound influence on the Nixon administration, but also on the Reagan administration and on the Margaret Thatcher administration in the UK, and also all of the Western world. And we moved significantly to the right economically, largely because of Milton Friedman's influence. What a lot of people don't know about Friedman, though, is that he was a proponent of some type of a basic income. He believed that in order to have freedoms, you had to have choice, which is why he believed that the market is a more fair arbiter of choice and freedoms than a government. He believed that because a government is single, you have one government, you don't have choice. You have to go along with that particular government. In the marketplace, you have choice whether to do business with this company or that company, or whether to be involved at all. So he believed that that was an element of freedom. But he also believed that in order to participate in the market and have those freedoms, you had to have the ability to do so. And so he believed, suggested something that he called a negative income tax, in which people below a particular income level would be given cash payments. And he felt strongly also that this was much more efficient than our current social welfare programs. He was an advocate of moving away from that kind of governmental influence. But, you know, for very different reasons, you know, we have people at both ends of the political spectrum who are advocating for universal basic income. In the Nixon administration, he was influenced strongly, as I said, by Martin Luther King and by Milton Friedman. And he really saw himself as the guy who was going to eliminate poverty. And he had this dream to do this. And he mobilized forces on both sides of the political spectrum. And this was proposed, and it was shown that it was favorably seen by about 90% of the newspapers. The work unions were in favor of it. The church organizations were in favor of it. It was generating tremendous support, as I said, across a political spectrum. The bill passed in the House of Representatives, and it came very close to passing in the Senate, but it got bogged down in the Senate when some of the Democrats felt that it didn't go quite far enough. And so it missed passing. And then the next year, they did a slightly different version of it they proposed. And again, it passed in the Senate, in the House, even more strongly. And again, got bogged down in the Senate and didn't go anywhere. And then, of course, when Nixon was discredited in the Watergate scandal, we quickly forgot about all of that. So, but the point that all of this brings up is that given the right set of circumstances, it really can be something that can be supported by both progressives and conservatives. And, you know, that was one of the main objections that I thought was really impressive when I began to kind of look into this whole thing, is that there really is a historical precedent and a political precedent for the support of UBI across the board politically.
That Martin Luther King was in favor of this doesn't surprise me, given his spiritual and evolution point that he obviously reached in his life, and probably other progressive figures during that time who also influenced Nixon, such as the Kennedys. But some of the other people you mentioned, you know, like Nixon and Friedman and people in his administration, it's mind-blowing. And it's also very uplifting, because I think the audience would sense and feel the same thing I do, that just your description of this and its viability and the people that have embraced it, even if their attempts to establish it failed in the past, was something that we failed to consider. And it gives us more hope going forward that this, in fact, can be passed, and soon, given the momentum it has behind it and the very convincing argument that you've given it, Mitch. You've sold me on it.
Well, yeah. Let me jump in real quick there, because you know, we've had some examples of it at the national level recently. You know, after the pandemic, we had the cash payments that were done, and we also had the child tax credit. Those are direct cash payments that were given out by the federal government, and they were highly popular. And you know, there's some disagreement about the effect that those had, but to my understanding, they really had a positive effect on the economy. And you know, even though people now are trying to tie the new inflation rates to that, the evidence that I see is really quite the opposite, that it's tied to other things, and that the child tax credit for one actually lifted 40% of the children who were in poverty out of poverty. So it had an enormous impact on millions and millions of families and children across the country.
Yes, the stimulus checks and the child tax credit policies express spiritual brotherhood, and which is the basis of the ageless wisdom teaching that you and I are familiar with, but probably not all our viewers and listeners. So I will set the stage for further discussion with some background information. Since the end of the 19th century, these teachings were brought to the West by several different teachers from the Himalayas who have written several books about the art and science of spiritual living. And it was then we first heard the phrase New Age. Now, these laws of life, so to speak, are the truths that underlie all the great religions, and they were kept in Sanskrit in remote parts of the world until humanity was ready not only to have spiritual values, but to implement them. The four teachers who brought this information to us were Helena Blavatsky, Helena Roebridge, Alice A. Bailey, and most recently, Benjamin Krim. And all of them talked about the coming of a great spiritual world teacher by the name of Maitreya, who would come at such a time as we're in right now. And the Gautama Buddha also mentioned that thousands of years ago, that such a teacher named Maitreya would emerge at such a time as this. Now, most of the world's great religions do expect the world teacher, whether that's the Christ or the Buddha or the Messiah, the Imamati, or the future Buddha. And that great teacher is here now, and he comes for both religious and non-religious alike, and his name is indeed Maitreya. And he's here to implement the priorities of true brotherhood, equitable sharing of the world's resources, meaning healthcare, housing, education, adequate food and shelter, and healthcare for all. This would seem to be the perfect implementation of Maitreya's first priorities, UBI. So as we describe UBI, let's keep in mind that the world teacher could emerge soon, given the world's conditions and the world being in such a state of chaos. And if we don't implement UBI by then we will once he gets here. So Mitch, how would a spiritual life mesh with UBI?
Yeah, well, some of the central tenets of the Ageless Wisdom teachings are that, first of all, that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience, and that the purpose of that experience is to manifest more and more of our actual spiritual identity through our physical, emotional, and mental human personalities. So evolution really is about the evolution of consciousness, that what we're talking about here is we are souls in incarnation, and we are here to help spiritualize matter, in a sense, in that we are, as we begin to tap into more of that spiritual element of our selves and of our consciousness, and it manifests more and more through our human personalities, we are lifting all of humanity to the ability to do so. However, one of the major roadblocks to more people being able to explore that higher nature is that they're so caught up just with the struggle to survive. And so if we really want to move forward as humanity, we need to alleviate those roadblocks for people that have no other choice than to spend all of their time and attention just basically staying alive.
And I know you've talked about some of them in the past, but have there been many current studies on the effects of universal basic income? And what were the results?
Yes, there's a group called Give Directly that has done pilot programs in this country and in several other countries, beginning in Kenya, I believe it was. And they've done significant research into the effects that UBI has, and I've mentioned some of the elements of increasing and helping with employment rates, but it also increases health rates, increases mental health. It reduces teen pregnancy rates. As I said, there's a whole slew of different societal problems that it helps to alleviate. And their research shows that every dollar that is invested into UBI actually has a return of about $2.60 for the economy as a whole. When one person is giving the ability to, for example, you know, buy more product for their business, and they increase the level of service that they're providing, well, that brings more customers to their business, and that helps to bring more money into the economy, and it just has a kind of a multiplicative effect on any economy where UBI is implemented.
And for our conservative brethren out there, our friends and associates and colleagues who have that particular political bent, can you think of any other kind of benefits that could be derived from implementing universal basic income that could convince them, who are probably the hardest audience for individuals and for society as a whole, some that you haven't mentioned already? Or is that enough? Should be enough.
On the conservative side, you know, there are obviously some of the things that we've already covered, but I think one of the strongest ones is the fact that UBI is one way to you know, get the government out of our business. You know, that's a very strong conservative ideal. And, you know, I think there's some validity to that. And UBI really streamlines a lot of these social programs. And there are arguments that UBI should not replace social programs, and then other approaches where it would. So, you know, that really is to be worked out. But it's a lot more effective and efficient than our current programs. Also, the way that it brings wealth into the economy, it encourages entrepreneurial endeavors, and it helps people to lift themselves up out of poverty. It actually increases engagement in the economy. And, as people who are advocating for free market capitalism, you know, that's one of the things that they talk a lot about, is that, people need to be able to lift themselves up. They need to be able to have the freedoms and the resources to do those kinds of things. And I think those are very strong arguments on the conservative side for UBI.
Very good. Well, it increases the chances of this eventually, despite the opposition, passing. And speaking of that, where do you see universal basic income going in the future? And what part do you think it can play in our collective evolution, spiritually, socially, economically, politically?
Well, I think, one of the main tenets of the Ageless Wisdom teaching is that we need to share the resources of the world more equitably so that we can get on with this business of evolving and becoming more spiritual beings and expressing more of that through our human personalities. And I think UBI is possibly one approach to being able to do that more effectively. It's one way to help to, you know, reallocate some of the resources that we need just to be able to live our lives freely and to pursue the passions that we have and to lead fulfilling lives. And I think, first of all, that UBI has to come up from the grassroots level. It has to, like other social programs and in fact, other social movements, it's not driven from the top down, it's driven from the bottom up. And the evidence that I see is that that's exactly what's happening right now. As I said, groups like Mayors for a Basic Income and another one called Income Movement, which is a kind of a political advocacy group, And there's another one, trying to think of it. Miracle Messages. They are implementing UBI programs for the homeless. But all of these are kind of generating interest and support at the grassroots level. These pilot programs in different cities throughout our country and other places in the world are generating data and statistics on the successes of UBI. And then the political component are where people are kind of mobilizing and gaining the support for it at grassroots level, and then taking it nationally and internationally. And so there's really a groundswell of work that's being done on behalf of a basic income. And it's being you know, tested, and it's being proven to work. And I think that it's really just a matter of time before it begins to begin to be implemented more widely and more universally. And there was even one of our Congress people, Ilhan Omar, I believe, who proposed a bill for UBI a year or two ago. So it's really beginning to grab hold, and I think that it's really moving towards a place of implementation. And, you know, as our current economic and political and religious structures begin to become more and more crystallized, and they begin to break down, we're going to have to find new ways to approach all of these elements of our society. And, you know, where things have become dogmatized and polarized and kind of stuck in the mud, if you will, they are no longer viable. You know, they're no longer sustainable. And so as part of the transition into a newer, better way of doing things, I think UBI definitely has an important role to play.
On this show, we frequently said, people power is the new world superpower. And so I know you've mentioned a lot of this, but just to recap on a more personal level, what can you suggest that our listeners and viewers do right now to help push forward the agenda for universal basic income?
Well, you know, I would say the same thing about that as I do about any of this information, you know, whether it's Ageless Wisdom information or political information or anything else. Become more educated about it. You know, if you think that this might have something, and it, even if you're just curious about it, you know, go out and read about UBI. Go out and read about these kinds of issues. There's tons of information out there. And the more informed we become about it, the more we can become active in supporting these policies. And then, you know, talk to people about it. You know, get out there and say, you know, what do you think about this? And when they bring up their objections, you say, well, I thought that too. because, you know, I did think it wasn't politically viable. But the more I dug into it, I became convinced that it is something that we actually could implement. And then, you know, wherever possible, take political action, you know, whether that's writing, signing petitions or writing letters to your elected officials or whatever it is, you know, become engaged in some way. If it means looking up one of these groups that are advocating for UBI and you know, finding out what they're doing and finding out how you can help. There are tons and tons of volunteer opportunities for people if that is something that appeals to you. So, yeah. And, of course, that applies to the work of spreading the word of you know, the Ageless Wisdom teachings and the priorities that we have as the social priorities, the economic, the political priorities that kind of jive with the spiritual life. I think they all go hand in hand.
That's what strikes me, I think, most about your talk today, Mitch, is the universality of it. One of the other things we've talked about in many of the Planetary Makeover shows is the whole concept of synthesis in this age, how opposing ideas are coming together to form something new. And you've outlined how both progressives and conservatives can get on board with this because it appeals to both of their philosophies. And it just increases the chances that eventually, somehow, we're going to get this passed.
Yeah, I think so. You know, the media tends to focus on the polarization that's going on and the bickering and the fighting in politics. But, you know, if you really pay attention, there are also our politicians out there who are reaching across the aisle and they're working to you know, make things happen. And I think this is one of those issues that could begin to catch on and have some political impetus. And so, yeah, I think it really behooves us to take a closer look at things like UBI and to see if we can't move the bar forward a little bit.
Mitch, I hadn't really planned on discussing this, but I found your talk so inspirational, not just emotionally exciting, but on a spiritual level and invigorating, that I wanted to mention that nearly a quarter century ago, I had a serious health crisis, which we did talk about in another episode of Planetary Makeover. And I had gone on disability for a while. And while it's not the same as universal basic income, it has some of those characteristics where it supported me when I could not work. And also during that phase, I found myself not long after going on disability that I wanted to go back to school. And you mentioned this sort of thing where it behooves people to improve their educational resume. And I went back to school and finished a degree that I didn't finish in the 80s. Which made me more viable in the jobs market once I graduated. And now I'm working and off of disability. And also another thing, while I was on SSDI, I was able to do volunteer work, which I wouldn't have had time for so much if I was working full-time. And that volunteer work led to a job. So while it's not as good as universal basic income, it had some of the advantages. But what you talked about was less oversight and fewer stringent guidelines. And those were present in the Social Security system. And if you didn't adhere to those, you could get bumped from the program easily. So this is much more advantageous. And even with the restrictions people work with Social Security Disability Insurance or just SSI, they're still encouraged because I experienced it personally to want to go back to work. There was a yearning in me that could not be quelled, not only for education, but for employment. And so it just goes to prove that what you said is a fact. At least I can vouch for that and can share it with others.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the most impressive elements of UBI, some type of basic income, is that it alleviates a lot of the stresses. You know, if you don't know how you're going to make ends meet tomorrow, next week, there's a very powerful emotional, psychological component that you're under stress, and it's really difficult to take effective action when you're under that kind of a stress. And UBI really alleviates a lot of that, and it allows people to explore their lives a little bit. It allows them to reach out and make choices and take risks, and it frees us up to be able to take more effective action in our lives in a whole variety of areas, you know, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. So, yeah, I think it really is something that can make a real difference in people's lives.
And Another thing I'd like to add is that, yes, I see that every day in the job that I do have as a housing advocate. People that are in danger of foreclosure or eviction, it causes all kinds of physical problems, mental, emotional. It can threaten their job, families break up. And universal basic income could throw them a lifeline so they know they could still put food on the table, they could send their kids to school, they can afford their rent or their mortgage payment. And this would be a tremendous psychic and emotional and physical and mental release. And it would unburden them in so many ways and free up their lives. And I see this even today on a daily basis, which makes me even more want to be a strong advocate for universal basic income. And I hope that does for our audience as well. And with that, Mitch, I want to thank you so much for enlightening us on this subject that holds so much promise for the future in so many ways. And we hope that we will see that progress and we could come back in the near future and have you talk to us more about this fascinating subject of universal basic income. Thank you so much, Mitch.
Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Our pleasure. And we'll see all of you again soon on another episode of Planetary Makeover. Goodbye for now. Visit us on Facebook at #PlanetaryMakeover. This show has been a production of planetarymakeover.org. At our website, we have a link to our bi-weekly live show at 5 p.m. Mondays Pacific Time and 8 p.m. Eastern Time. At our website, we also have a link to our archives and a selection of our shows. For more background info, visit www.shareinternationalwest.org. That's shareinternational-west.org. For related books and DVDs and CDs by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of Maitreya, the world teacher, please go to share-ecart.com. That's share-ecart.com. We also invite you to watch another show that we really love entitled What in the World is Happening? And that show, which you don't want to miss, is produced by Share International Canada. Please view episodes of What in the World is Happening on demand at youtube.com/@MessageofHopeWeekly. It will be live streaming mostly on the second Saturday of every month at the Share International Canada Facebook page.
Do stay tuned a minute because we think you'll really love one of our most popular shows about healing of our own bodies and a way to heal these terrible crises in the world that are like a cancer. You can see it at our YouTube channel. So go to YouTube/Planetary Makeover. That's called Planetary Makeover. And do a search for Maitreya's Healing. That's Maitreya, Healing. So that's YouTube, Planetary Makeover, Maitreya's Healing.